Welcome to China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Sarah Williams.
Hong Kong's leader says he's ready for talks with protesters.
Chinese state media accused the U.S. of backing the protests.
Violence breaks out between construction workers and villagers in Yunnan province.
Our roundtable looks at air pollution in China.
And we hear how the bike-sharing trend has hit China. Hello and welcome to China Focus.
Let's look at some of the biggest news stories this week.
Tensions remain high in Hong Kong, where demonstrators opposing Beijing's decision to select candidates in the territory's 2017 elections continue their protest. On Friday, police tore down barricades, tents, and canopies, which have blocked streets for more than 2 weeks in the Mong Kok district. Occupy Central condemned the raid, saying the government is creating obstacles to dialogue.
On Wednesday, hundreds of police used pepper spray and batons and violence during clashes in the Admiralty District.
Human rights groups and Hong Kong residents expressed outrage after several police were caught on camera beating an unarmed and handcuffed protester. The injured man, social worker Ken Song, showed reporters the injuries he'd received in the beating and said he's seeking legal advice.
You should have seen the TV footage of a number of police officers brutally assaulting me while I was retained and entering defenseless. Prior to that, I had already been assaulted and was later assaulted yet again in the police station.
Meanwhile, Hong Kong's leader Leung Chun-ying says he's looking for ways to resume talks aimed at ending the protest. Ivan Broadhead reports.
Speaking at a news conference Thursday, Hong Kong Chief Executive Leung said he could offer no concessions on the 31st of August edict of the Chinese National People's Congress Standing Committee that the 2017 chief executive elections would proceed on the basis of one person, one vote in an election contested only by Beijing-approved candidates.
Politics is the art of the possible, and we have to draw a line between possibilities and impossibilities. The central authorities have said clearly that they will not retract the Standing Committee decision on the 31st of August. And we would like to explore with them what else we can do together so that the 5 million eligible voters in Hong Kong will have the first opportunity in Hong Kong's history to vote in the chief executive in 2017, and this has never happened before.
Mr. Leung's news conference comes a day after the broadcast of a video showing plainclothes police officers beating social worker Ken Zhang, who later showed reporters the scrapes and bruises he says he sustained in the assault. Earlier Thursday, Hong Kong police used pepper spray to disperse protesters who were again trying to block a street near government headquarters. The government views the protests as illegal. However, the news conference could not quell growing anger at the police brutality directed against pro-democracy demonstrator Ken Zhang. While the officers involved in the beating have been suspended and authorities have promised an investigation, legislator James Toh says 10 Hong Kong district councillors have threatened to quit their posts on a security committee.
It is a very blatant, serious assault, if not a torture act. Very serious act.
Ivan Broadhead for VOA News. Hong Kong.
Protesters in Hong Kong stormed the Lung Wo Road tunnel after police cleared other barricades at nearby demonstration sites. Protester Samuel Lam says he hopes blocking roads will force concessions from the government.
If we keep occupying different streets, and this may give some pressure to them because they cannot control us.
In mainland China, the state-run news media say the protests in Hong Kong are backed by the United States. Shannon Van Sant in Beijing reports that analysts say it's a charge the Chinese government has made before.
A series of newspaper reports in mainland China say the United States is partly to blame for the demonstrations filling the streets of Hong Kong. The stories say officials from the U.S. government-funded organization, the National Endowment for Democracy, have been meeting with protest organizers. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Hong Lei commented on the allegations. He said Hong Kong is a part of China, and no foreign country has the right to interfere. He urged relevant countries to be prudent with their words and actions and refrain from sending wrong signals. Chinese state-run newspaper reports and editorials have been more explicit. A commentary in the People's Daily said that Louisa Grev, the National Endowment for Democracy's vice president for Asia, Middle East, and North Africa and global programs, met with key people in Occupy Central several months ago to talk about the movement. Hong Kong's Ta Kung Pao newspaper reported that pro-democracy legislators in Hong Kong have received U.S. government money. Doug Young, author of a book on Chinese news media called The Party Line, says blaming unrest on the U.S. government is not a new tactic for China.
This is actually quite similar to what happened during the Tiananmen protests in 1989. Afterwards, there were all kinds of reports about sort of black hands. That was the word that was making the rounds back then.
Other reports in the People's Daily newspaper accused protesters of trying to stage a color revolution, referencing the peaceful protests that took place in the former Soviet Union. Joseph Chung of Hong Kong's Alliance for Democracy and a professor of international relations at the University of Hong Kong says comparing the Hong Kong protests to the color revolution is a sign the Chinese government is leaving no room for compromise with the protesters.
This is very dangerous because in communist terminology, this means that the relationship between the Chinese authorities and the pro-democracy movement is a contradiction between enemies, meaning that there can be no negotiations, meaning that violent crackdown is justifiable.
The National Endowment for Democracy denies allegations in Chinese state news media of meetings with protest organizers. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
The protests have lost support among some who want to do business in the demonstration zones. Sunny Low, a professor of social sciences at the Hong Kong Institute of Education, told VOA's Victor Beatty about the dispute between Beijing and the protesters.
The student leaders and the democratic leaders are making demands which are still politically unacceptable to the central government in Beijing. In the minds of the central government in Beijing, the Standing Committee's decision on Hong Kong's political reform by the end of August cannot be changed. So from the perspective of Beijing, the people of Hong Kong have to work within that legal and political parameters set by Beijing. Namely, the chief executive in 2017 will first be nominated by the 1,200-member nomination committee, and then finally there will be 2 to 3 final candidates who should get at least 50% support from this nomination committee before they go out for universal suffrage. In the minds of the protesters, these parameters set by Beijing is unacceptable. So both sides are now having serious opinion differences.
Well, you've written that dialogue, not protest, is the students' best bet for winning democracy. What do you mean?
For the safety of all the citizens, the protesters may have to toy with the idea of having a strategic retreat so as to preempt the possibility of any inevitable police crackdown. In a sense, the Occupy Central movement has been out of control, and it has been involving many complex elements, even including anti-Occupy Central movement supporters with the possible involvement of triad forces. So the police had a hard time to deal with all these law and order issues.
Sunny Low of the Hong Kong Institute of Education.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Take a deep breath. Coming up, we look at air quality in Beijing.
Chinese officials are providing new details about what they say happened during a clash between villagers and construction workers in the southwestern province of Yunnan. The government account reported by the official Xinhua news agency said villagers on Tuesday kidnapped 8 construction workers while they were eating breakfast in the provincial capital, Kunming.
Xinhua says the villagers were angry. The workers had resumed building a logistics center where construction had been stalled for several months because of a dispute over compensation for landowners. The news agency says later Tuesday, hundreds of villagers raided the construction site, throwing homemade explosives at the workers. It also said the kidnapped crew was doused with gasoline and lit on fire.
Officials say six construction workers and two residents were killed in the incident. It is not clear how the residents died. At least 18 others were reported to be injured.
Gao Shangpei, a local villager, tells VOA's Mandarin service that the official media reports are not true.
He said the government is employing trickery and trying to blame the farmers. The government controls the propaganda tools, and farmers are unable to speak in self-defense. Efforts to reach the developer of the project or local officials have been unsuccessful so far.
Last week, we told you about the planned sale of the famed Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City to a Chinese insurance company. But now the U.S. government is reviewing the agreement.
A spokesman for the U.S. mission to the United Nations said that last week's $1.95 billion sale to the Anbang Insurance Group is being scrutinized. And he said the planned renovation will be the subject of particular attention.
The Waldorf Astoria has been home to U.S. envoys for the United Nations for more than 50 years. Every September, the U.S. State Department takes over two floors of the hotel to serve as headquarters to the many U.S. diplomats that attend the U.N. General Assembly.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, bike sharing becomes the new trend in China.
Some people say not to worry about the air. Some people never had experience with.
Within the last week, China's northern cities, including Beijing, have experienced significant smog. Authorities issued an orange alert. That's the second highest warning. The Wall Street Journal says under orange alerts, workers are to stop construction, factories are to reduce emissions by 30%, and fireworks and outdoor barbecues are forbidden. Children and senior citizens are advised to stay inside, and the public is advised to travel by municipal transportation and to avoid using cars.
On social media, residents of Beijing joked about the conditions. Other netizens criticized the government for not issuing a red alert, the highest level.
Joining us to discuss China's struggles with pollution are Michael Greenstone, a professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Renyi Zhang, a professor of atmospheric sciences at Texas A&M University.
I asked Dr. Zhang if he believes Chinese authorities grasp the severity of the problem that pollution has become for the country.
I think the Chinese government has always recognized the issue. I think there are some incidents that probably promote the government to pay more attention recently, but, I've been doing research with my Chinese colleagues and for the last maybe 10, 20, 15 years. And so the government is actually paying a lot of attention to this. And it's probably just very recently this issue getting a lot of publicity, I mean, for some special reasons. Maybe one of those was because the U.S. Embassy published their measurements of particulate matter in Beijing at the embassy site. But the government has always been aware of these issues, and they are paying attentions, but unfortunately, there's not much improvement. Frankly speaking, I think this is a very, very complicated issue. Personally, I don't know how much they can do. I mean, unless they take some very drastic actions.
Well, I'll pose the question to you, Dr. Greenstone. What can China do to reduce its pollution levels?
Well, I think the first thing to note is at the highest levels of Chinese government, it appears to become a much more important issue than it had been in the past. I think at the highest levels, they recently declared a war on pollution. And it will definitely require some will to alter pollution levels, but I think imposing a set of regulations that restrict pollution emissions is, certainly feasible. It's just a matter of wanting to do it.
Is that basically the issue, the political will to do something about it? Because obviously they want to fuel that economy and keep it going at a robust rate, which would seem to go at odds with what is happening in the environment.
No, I think you raise the central tension here. And what they are going to have to try and do is find a way to balance the competing goals of continuing to the really incredible rate of growth that they've experienced in the last 20 or 25 years that has greatly improved living standards of, hundreds of millions of people on the one hand, and on the other hand, unintended consequence of that growth has been a lot of health problems for people. And I think now that that is becoming clear that there are health problems associated with it, that at least through their statements, the Chinese government seems quite interested in finding kind of maybe balancing things a slightly different way than they have so far.
Well, Dr. Zhang, I mean, you're talking about improving living standards and everything, but of course with pollution and then the impact, I mean, this must have a very difficult, to say the least, impact on Chinese, particularly those living in big cities like, well, particularly Beijing and other cities like Shanghai.
I think that's correct. I mean, like, I've been seeing some reports, I mean, regarding the there may be some improvement in emission, which are caused by strict regulatory actions by the government. The bottom line is that the severe haze episode has become worse and worse. For me, I think there's a lot of issues with the citizens, definitely recognize those issues. There's a lot of pressures on the government. But I think what the government have to do to improve the air quality, I mean, I think they really have to do some drastic actions. To me, I mean, they have to reduce emission from transportation. They have to reduce emissions from power plants. And I think another very severe issue in China is there are a lot of unregulated small enterprises that cause enormous emission problems. Those are very, very hard issues.
Well, Dr. Greenstone, you wrote a paper that demonstrated that high levels of air pollution from coal combustion are causing the 500 million residents of northern China to lose an incredible amount of life expectancy. I saw a figure, 2.5 billion years. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what the estimates from the paper suggest, that if you live in the northern part of China, your life expectancy, if you live north of the Huai River, your life expectancy is about 5 years less than the people who live on the south side. And that all comes from a policy that highly subsidizes, even makes free coal for winter heating. An obvious first policy that would, I think, tremendously help would be to remove the subsidies on coal that are causing these terrible health problems, or reduce them at least.
But is that likely to happen?
The Chinese government they're in a tough spot. They have to find a way to balance the imperative of continued growth with the need to protect the health of their citizens. And I think an absolutist view is not the right view. They can turn the dial on reducing the subsidies and or increasing the price of coal, and that will balance things out a little bit better.
The United States and many other nations and of course, large corporations have worked very hard on clean coal technology. Is China trying to adopt any of this, or even perhaps work in conjunction with Western nations to address the issue of air pollution through coal?
I've read of some demonstration projects going on in China. I don't know the extent of it. I think the main thing is that there are some really simple, and I expect since the getting rid of the first unit of pollution is cheaper than the last, getting rid of the last unit, I expect that there's a fair number of relatively inexpensive ones. But I think the public would not be excited about a policy that got rid of all pollution, because that would do damage to the economic growth that has transformed hundreds of millions of lives there. But I think they're somewhere between where they are now and, you know, a completely clean environment that is, I suspect, a better political place to be than where they are right now.
Dr. Zhang, how does Asian pollution impact storms over the Pacific Ocean and, you know, the United States itself?
Yeah, I think that's another issue that people are paying attention to. I think there have been studies indicating that the Chinese pollution is causing air quality problems in the United States as well. And we've been doing some studies looking to the impact of long-range transport of pollution from Asia, primarily China, India, and how that have an impact on storms over the Pacific. And very strikingly, we found that there can be climate signals trace back to Asian air pollution. And for some very critical weather phenomena over the Pacific.
Well, Dr. Zhang, there's a lot of talk, of course, about global warming, which the burning of coal could contribute to. Would it be fair to say that the harsh winter that we've experienced here in the United States might have been caused by Asian pollution?
Yeah, I think it's likely. Because North America just downwind of the Asian continent. But I think this is a very complicated problem, and I think certainly more studies need to be done. I think the other issue here is that when people talk about climate change, you know, some of those are tied up with global warming, such as the emission of greenhouse gases. But there are some other factors here. It's also kind of interesting to note is that the tiny particles, aerosols, actually have a cooling effect in general on the climate system. And I think the other aspect people may ask is that somehow the particles they produce in the air may actually block sunlight that actually cause cooling on the climate. So this cooling may actually mask the true signal by greenhouse gases. And it might be possible that, you know, those Asian countries or those developing countries may sacrifice their air quality, but they may actually help somehow to reduce global warming because those tiny particles do indeed reflect a significant amount of sunlight back to space.
I want to jump in here. I don't dispute the science, but I don't think anyone would claim that that is anything but a short-term remedy for climate change. The particles are not a long-run solution to the warming and the increase in atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide.
Right. I think there's still a lot of uncertainties. If you look into the recent report by Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, IPCC, and IPCC still rank the aerosol issues as the largest uncertainty in projection of climate.
Dr. Greenstone, if you could just elaborate a little bit more on that observation and why you think that the particles might not have such as stark an effect.
Well, I think what Dr. Zhang is saying that in the short term, those particles, which are a consequence of the combustion of fossil fuels, especially coal, in Asian countries, are helping to cool the planet by reflecting the sun back. But they do nothing to prevent the accumulation of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And so while they are reflecting some of the sun back, the kind of underlying climate change is increasing. And eventually, I think, and this is not my expertise, but everyone I've talked to says, eventually we will not be able to rely just on the particles to counteract the increase in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Michael Greenstone, professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Renyi Zhang, a professor of atmospheric sciences at Texas A&M University.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
We've just heard about air pollution in China, but a favorite form of transport in the country is making a comeback, and it's one that can help the environment.
Bike sharing has gone global, and the Chinese cities of Hangzhou and Wuhan are among the leaders. In just 7 years, China has moved from having no public bikes to having more than 650,000.
Although bicycles were traditionally very popular in China, beginning in the 1980s, the bikes were replaced by cars. But now, because of smog and huge traffic backups, bicycles have once again become popular in cities.
I've ridden a bike around Beijing, Sarah, and I can tell you it's a lot of fun. They're popular here in Washington as well, with bike rentals all around the city.
On a more serious note, the world is becoming increasingly aware of the significant problem of the disease Ebola. Fears about contracting the illness have now surfaced in China.
During the recent national holiday earlier this month, merchants reported a drop in the sales of salmon because many consumers worry that the fish is somehow linked to the deadly disease.
The Guangdong Aquatic Products Processing and Market Alliance said sales of salmon dropped by more than 50%. The rumors concerning Ebola and salmon have apparently stemmed from some Chinese media reports, which said infectious salmon anemia was compared to Ebola. But health officials have stressed that the salmon disease cannot be transmitted to humans.
A pharmaceutical company in China is applying for market approval for a drug that is being touted as a possible cure for Ebola. Meanwhile, last week, Sihuan Pharmaceutical Holdings Group signed an agreement with the China Academy of Military Medical Science to push a drug called JK05 through China's approval process. At the moment, the Academy-developed drug has only been tested in mice and is approved for emergency military use only.
Che Fengsheng, chairman of Sihuan, said last week his company will file with China's Food and Drug Administration before the end of the year. He said the agency has attached great importance to the application and that priority will be given to the drug in the approval process. Sihuan's product is just one contender among a number of experimental drugs worldwide aimed at curing Ebola.
China Focus is your program. We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at voaasia@voanews.com, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be sure to look at our program page at voanews.com/China Focus.
That's it for our show. I'm Sarah Williams.
And I'm